And to talk about the Isser of Basar B'chalav. And as we know, we find three times in the Torah, Lo Sevashel Gedi B'chalev Imo, which means, says the Gemara, number one, you're not allowed to cook Basar B'chalav. Number two, you're not allowed to derive any benefit from Basar B'chalav. And number three, you are certainly not allowed to eat or to consume any Basar B'chalav. We spoke yesterday how if you read the Torah very carefully, it seems that the only prohibition that the Torah instructs us to stay away from is you're not allowed to eat, you're not allowed to cook, you're not allowed to have benefit. But if it's not cooked together, that's really only an Issur D'Rabbanan. That's what we refer to as a harchaka, it's a gzeira mid'Rabbanan that they put in place to make sure a person stays away from violating the real Aveira. So one of the things that we mentioned yesterday was a gzeira mid'Rabbanan, a harchaka that was put in place with regard to this halacha is that one has to be careful that they do not eat basar and chalav al shulchan echad. So the Gemara discusses in Maseches Chulin, in the 8th parak of Maseches Chulin, the Gemara says, kol ha-basar, when you have any meat, which includes meat from all kinds of different animals, asur lahalosim gvina al ha-shulchan. Says the Gemara, you're not allowed to put it on the table together with milk, because we're concerned, maybe you're going to lean over, and you're going to take from somebody else who's eating a milchig dish, and he's going to take from something that I'm eating, which is a fleshig dish, and therefore we're concerned that maybe things are going to get confused, things are going to get mixed up, and you're not allowed to have them together. And the Gemara there in Maseches Chulin Daf Kuf Dalet discusses all of the variations of this halacha. Today, I just want to make a correction to something I said yesterday. Somebody pointed out to me very correctly that I made a little bit of a mistake in the example I gave yesterday, and that's what I'd like to discuss. It's a little bit of a mistake, not a real mistake, and you'll understand why it's not so clear that it's a mistake at all, but it's worth mentioning regardless. So, number one, we have here that the Gemara tells us, when you have one person who's eating chalav and one person who's eating basar, they should not be eating at the same table because we have to be concerned. Maybe they're going to cross each other, maybe someone's going to take something off the plate of the other. Now, the most obvious question when you read such a Gemara is, we have a Gemara, Maseches Yevamos, Daf Kuftes, and it's a Gemara that finds itself in many different places. The very beginning of Beitza, many places the Gemara has this concept that Ein Gozrim Gzeira L'Gzeira. That means, the Chachamim have a right, as we know, it says, Asu Siyag LaTorah. They have to make fences, they have to make safeguards to make sure that we don't violate the law of the Torah itself, the instruction that the Ribbono Shel Olam gave us. But they don't have a right to make a double barrier, to make a gzeira on a gzeira, which means they don't have a right to make a fence that you shouldn't violate an issur d'rabbanan. They have a right to make a gzeira that should stop us from violating an issur d'oraisa, but not a double gzeira. So that's the rule that the Gemara assumes in Maseches Yevamos and Maseches Beitza. That's generally the rule that we work with, that we don't make a gzeira l'gzeira. The question is, why? How come they don't have a right to make a double gzeira? So Rashi says it's because the Torah only said, Asu Mishmeres l'mishmarti. You have to make a safeguard for my mitzvos. It doesn't say v'lo mishmeres l'mishmeres. It doesn't say you should make a double safeguard. So therefore they don't have a right. Some Gaonim say the reason why is because imagine if you're going to have gzeiros on top of gzeiros on top of more gzeiros on top of another gzeiro on a takana, life is going to be impossible. We're not going to be able to breathe anymore. So the Gaonim say maybe that's why we limit it and we say, no, this is the rule. You have a right, as the Chachamim of a generation, you have a right to make a gzeira. You have a right to make a takana. If you see there's an area where you think people are going to make a mistake, go right ahead, make a gzeira, make a takana. But you don't have a right to take it so far and to keep adding and piling onto that and make more takanas, more gzeiras. That's something that we consider to be unreasonable, and we would say they don't have a right as the Chachamim to do that. So now let's try to figure out here. We have an issur d'oraisa, which is you're not allowed to eat meat and milk that was actually cooked together. Midrabbanan, they made gzeira, you're not allowed to eat meat and milk that was not cooked together. That's a harchaka. That is a safeguard that they put in place to make sure that people don't violate the real aveira of eating meat and milk together. Now you're going to take it even a step further and say, not only am I not allowed to eat meat and milk that weren't cooked together, I have two cold items, a piece of salami and a piece of cheese. Based on the strict letter of the law, you're allowed to eat them together. They weren't cooked together. But yet, the Chachamim said, don't do it, because it's going to lead you to do something worse. Now we take it 10 steps further and we say, not only are you not allowed to eat the salami and the cheese together, but if you have one person who's eating one item, and another person eating the other one, and I have no intention of eating yours, and you have no interest in eating mine, we're not even allowed to sit at the same table together? That sounds like it's very far removed from the original pasuk that we learn, which is you're not allowed to eat meat and milk that was cooked together, which leads all the Rishonim to wonder, isn't that a classical case of gzeira l'gzeira? Isn't that a safeguard on top of a safeguard that's leading us too far away from what the original Issur d'Oraisa actually was? So the Rambam writes, in Ilchos Machalas Asuras, the Rambam tries to defend this halacha. The Rambam says, why is it that the Chachamim had a right to make this gzeira and tell us, not only are you not allowed to eat basar b'chalav that's cold together, but you're not even allowed to eat at the same table as each other. So the Rambam says the reason why is because lo badil minei. We all know that whenever I'm interested, I can go to the fridge and I can take out a piece of cheese, I can take out a cup of milk, and we all know whenever I'm interested, I can go to the fridge and I can take out some salami, I can take out some meat, I can take out whatever I want. So because I'm used to eating both items all the time, therefore the Rambam says, lo badal minei, I don't know to stay away from that item, I always eat it. So I happen to have to remember now that I'm eating fleishigs, that I shouldn't eat milchigs, says the Rambam, it's too confusing. It's too confusing because we're dealing with items that everybody eats all the time, and because I eat them all the time, I have to make an extra safeguard in place to make sure that I don't confuse them altogether. So yes, says the Rambam, it's true that in general, you're not allowed to make a gzeira l'gzeira. However, the Rambam says when you're dealing with something which is lo badal minei, which people don't know to stay far away from because they're so used to having it all the time, so therefore we have to make an extra gzeira, and we have to say we're going to go above and beyond the regular rules, and we're going to make an institution that keeps you very far away. It's very similar to what Tosus writes in Meseches Brachos and Meseches Beitza. Tosus writes, Iloha lo kayimha. If I'm not going to make this gzeira, nobody's going to keep the other one. So if I'm not going to set it up in place this way, from the outset, when I make the gzeira in the first place, then what I ultimately intended to make the gzeira for is also not going to be fulfilled either. So therefore, Tosus writes, we have to sometimes break the regular rule, and we have to assume that even though generally we say you're not allowed to make a double safeguard, but where you have a situation where it's so easy for people to get confused, we even make a gzeira l'gzeira. The Chacham Tzvi discusses this as well, and he says whenever it's ragil, whenever you think people are really going to make a mistake, because it's something that they're so used to, so obviously he says we have to make a gzeira l'gzeira. Tosus writes in Maseches Shabbos, a very famous case. He says, are you allowed to put a kli with water in it? Let's say I have a flame that I lit for Shabbos candles, and I'm afraid that some of the sparks from the flame are going to come out from the fire itself, and they're going to make a mess all over my counter. Not that I'm afraid it's going to make a fire, I'm afraid it's going to make a mess all over the place. I'm going to have these ashes. So Tosus writes, do I have a right to take a cup of water and leave it there, a tray of water, and leave it there on the counter? Because I know that when a burning hot piece of that flame is going to come off of the candle, it will go straight into the water, and then it won't make a mess all over the counter. So Tosus says, no, you have to be concerned. Yesh lachos shema yaser kein b'Shabbos. You have to be concerned. Maybe someone's going to set it up on Shabbos itself, and that would obviously be mechabe. You would be putting out a flame. So you're not allowed to do that. Therefore, Tosus writes, you're not even allowed to do it me'er of Shabbos. You're not even allowed to put that container there with water before Shabbos begins, because we're concerned maybe someone's going to come on Shabbos itself and put a big pot of water there to catch all of the ashes that fall off of the candle, and that would be a real malacha of mechabe. So Tosus writes, I don't understand. What's the malacha? Even if you would do that on Shabbos itself, even if you would take the water and put it there with the ashes falling into it, that would be a malacha shein tzricha legufa. You don't want that the ashes should be put out. All you want is that it shouldn't make a mess all over the counter. It happens to be the only way to do that is to put this out here to catch all the ashes. So it's a malacha shein tzricha legufa, which is only an issur d'rabbanan, and now you're making a gzeira on top of a gzeira. Now you're going to tell me, not only are you not allowed to put it out on Shabbos because it's an issur d'rabbanan, but you're not even allowed to do it on Erev Shabbos because maybe you'll come to do it on Shabbos itself. Isn't that a gzeira l'gzeira? That's a classical case. So Tosus says, no, because since it's something that is kal be'enei ha'adam, Tosus writes, since it's something that people don't really think about, they don't pay attention to this, they don't realize when I'm putting the water out there on the pan, it's going to put out the flame, nobody's thinking about such a thing. Tosus says, if you don't make an extra safeguard, they're going to come to violate the Aveira itself, which is an issur d'rabbanan. So Tosus writes, we have some exceptions to the rule. So that's the answer here as well. It's true, it seems to be gzeira l'gzeira, but because we are so used to eating milchiks and fleishiks at our convenience whenever we want, therefore we have to make an extra takana here, and we have to say that not only is it usur for a person to eat cold salami and cold cheese together, which is an extension of the issur d'oraisa, you're also not allowed to eat when you have two people eating two different items, milchigs on one side of the table, fleishigs on the other side, That would not be permissible because we're concerned. Maybe you're going to get confused. Maybe you're going to lean over and take from the other person's plate. Says the Gemara. Although we have this prohibition, the Gemara says there are some kulas that you're allowed to rely on. Number one, when you have the food that's not being eaten at the table, but you have the food that's being prepared in the kitchen, says the Gemara, you don't have to be concerned that when you have a serving table where you're just setting everything up and you're going to bring it out to the table where people are going to eat, you don't have to be concerned that it's going to get mixed up there. If I have a pan of lasagna and I'm not really eating it here, I'm just putting it on the counter because I'm about to bring it out, I'm the waiter, and right next to it there's a pan of chicken, I don't have to be concerned that maybe the waiter is going to put one spoon into the other. Why would he do such a thing? The waiter knows, one person ordered this, one person ordered that. And therefore, says the Gemara, in a case like that, if it's not the actual table where it's being eaten, you don't have to be concerned at all. That's kula number one. Kula number two, says the Gemara there on Meseches Chulin, is Reb Shimon ben Gamliel matir l'shnei zarim, she'enam chokim ze'im ze' es mezonam. If you have two people who don't even know each other, who are eating at the same table. So I said yesterday the example when you have a public cafeteria in an office building, and you have all different members of the company are coming down together to eat lunch together. So I don't know you, you don't know me. There's a few thousand workers in this place, and it just happens to be I end up at the table together with somebody else. I never met the person, he never met me, I'm never going to see him again, or maybe I will, but I don't have a relationship with him. Says the Gemara, why should he be concerned that I'm going to lean over and take a bite out of whatever he's eating? Why would I do such a thing? I don't know who the guy is. It's totally inappropriate. And therefore, says the Gemara, if we're dealing with a situation where it doesn't make sense that I would lean over and eat something from the plate of the other person sitting at the other end of the table, then we don't have to be concerned about eating milchiks and fleishiks together, because it's something that is never going to happen. The Pischei Tshuva in Yerodea writes something which is a bit of a surprising comment. He says, take for example, you have sometimes a candlelit dinner, and you have that candle is made out of chema. He says, sometimes the candle is made out of butter. So today we don't use such candles where they're made out of butter or out of milchigs. So he says you have to be concerned. How can you have a candle like that on the table? Every once in a while when you eat at a restaurant and there's a candle, sometimes the wax spills over onto the plate. So he says, shouldn't you be concerned that the wax is going to spill onto your fleishig meal that you're having? Shouldn't that be a part of this whole issue that we're describing here? Okay, that's usually not the situation that you have, but that's how far the Pischei Tshuva wants to take it. We have to be concerned about such a thing. So yesterday I mentioned something which one of the members of the Shir pointed out to me was a slight mistake. And that is, I mentioned, when you have two people in an office building that go down to the public cafeteria together, and one person's eating treifa food. I have a non-kosher co-worker that comes and eats with me, and I know him very well. And every day we go downstairs together and we eat lunch right next to each other. So is there an issue for me to sit at the same table as a person who's eating non-kosher food? Or would you say, why would I lean over? Even if he's my good friend, I know he's eating non-kosher food, so there's no concern. Maybe the only time there's a concern that I'm going to lean over and eat something from another person's plate is when he's eating kosher food that's milchigs, I'm eating kosher food that's fleishigs, maybe I'm going to make a mistake and lean over and taste his french fries or taste something else that he has on his plate. But where I have a non-Jew who's sitting next to me, who's eating non-kosher food, I know to stay away from his sandwich, I know to stay away from his food. What would possess me to ever lean over the table and eat something from the non-kosher item that's sitting on the table in front of me? Do I really have to be concerned in a case like that or not? This is a major discussion in the Shach. The Shach in Yerodei and Siman Peches goes through this discussion and he says, well, when it comes to Pesach, what if I have a non-kosher worker who comes to my home on Pesach and who brings a non-kosher sandwich, meaning they bring chametz on Pesach. And now I'm sitting down to have lunch, and I want to sit down at the table together with this person because I have a relationship with them. Am I allowed to sit down? I know it's Pesach. I'm never going to turn over to the other side of the table and take a piece of their bread from the sandwich that they're eating. Says the Shach, absolutely usher. Why is it usher? Because since you're used to eating chametz all year long, maybe you're going to make a mistake and eat the chametz now as well. You're not going to remember for a few seconds while you're eating. Sometimes we get carried away when we eat. So you're going to forget that today is Pesach and I'm not allowed to eat the chametz. So says the Shach, you wouldn't be allowed to eat together with that person who's eating chametz on Pesach. What about together with the non-Jew who's eating the non-kosher food? Well, says the Shach, I don't know. Since all year I know to stay away from the non-kosher food, maybe that's not the same concern as I have by chametz. And therefore he says, maybe I should say it's mutter. The Shach then brings another case, and he says, what about a person who says, let's say I'm on a diet, and I say to myself, I promise, I'm not doing this, but I promise, I wouldn't do such a thing, I promise that I'm never eating potato chips again. That's the promise that I take. That's a way to make sure I make a neder. I'm never eating potato chips again. Now, it just so happens to be, lunchtime comes around, the guy sits at a table right next to me with a bag of potato chips, kosher potato chips. But I took a neder that I'm never going to eat potato chips again. Am I allowed to sit and eat with that person? Says the Shach, I don't know. Maybe that's something that I'm used to eating all year long, and I happen to make a neder upon myself that now I'm not going to eat it. So says the Shach, maybe that's a concern that I have to have, that I'm not used to staying away from the chips. I just happen to take a neder upon myself for dietary purposes only. So is that good enough to be a safeguard for me to stay away from that guy's potato chips or not? So the Shach goes through a lengthy discussion here whether or not we should say somebody who eats kosher food together with somebody who's eating non-kosher food, do we assume that they have to sit at two separate tables, or should we assume no? The Jew knows to stay away from the food that the non-kosher person, that the non-Jew might be eating, because he knows it's not kosher. And all year long he knows to stay away from it. This is the Shaila that the Shach discusses. It's not entirely clear that it's mutter lechatchila. The Shach vacillates and he goes back and forth whether or not we should allow such a thing. One final thing that I saw, which is fascinating, the Achronim have a discussion about those who choose on Pesach not to accept machine matzahs. So those Hasidim who felt that it's not the right thing to accept held that it was chametz gomer, not just they decided they were going to be machmir. They held it was chametz gomer, so they sent to Shiloh, what do we do? We're sitting around at Shalashudas in Shul, and the minig is Shalashudas on Pesach, the shul doesn't serve, everybody brings their own matzah. And a lot of shuls, they have that. I remember in the white shul, they used to do that. Shalashudas on Shabbos Chalamayit, everybody brought their own matzah. So we all are Hasidim, we all come with our handmade matzahs, and now some guy, a Litvak, walks into the room with his machine matzahs, sits down right next to me, and he's eating his matzahs. And I hold as a chassid that he's eating chametz on Pesach. Not just that I'm machmer, I hold that the machine matzahs are chametz. So the shaila that was raised by the Gedolei Achronim was, do I have a right to sit at the table with this person, or do I have to maybe move away somewhere else? So they say, well, maybe you hate the guy so much you would never dare to lean over and eat something from his plate. The guy who dares to eat the machine matzahs on Pesach, you think I would ever lean over to his plate and take anything that he's eating? I would never get near his plate. And therefore the Achronim say, maybe you don't have to be concerned, because in that situation, you know, there's enough of a safeguard in place, because Chalila, I would never even sit at the same table as a person who's eating machine matzah. I happen to end up with him here, but I would never dare to turn over to his plate. It's like almost like the guy who's eating treif. So that's what the Achronim discuss, which again is another interesting application to this very shaila that the Shach raises here. But in general, this is one of the harchakas that we find with regard to the Isser in our parsha of Achilas Basar B'Chalav. Not only do we have a prohibition to eat the Basar and Chalav that's cooked together, but we have a rabbinic prohibition to eat two cold items that are not cooked together also. And we have a third prohibition here that you're not even allowed to sit at the same table as somebody else who's eating the other item, or as somebody called it, the other gender, milchiks or fleishiks. You're not even allowed to sit at the same table if there's a concern that maybe you're going to take something from the plate that they are eating.